This morning, in honor of Black History Month, I'm sharing my conversation with the War and Treaty, who I spoke with a few days ago, Michael Trotter and Tanya Blount Trotter. If you saw them at their first tropical heat wave appearance, you were one of the people who was wowed by them. And now they're big time on a big label, playing large festivals, but they've retained that sense of commitment to their art and to each other and to us. Their new album is called Heartstown, and it is deeply personal, even as you'll hear, born of trauma, and yet it speaks to all of us. And that's how I started the conversation, by asking them how they're able to craft a universal song from private pain.
Before we create, Taya and I, we try to make sure that we're connecting with each other first and with each other's story. I mean, the thing that I found in my 11 years of knowing Tanya is that every single day I learn something new. Every single day I learn something new about her and myself and who I am with her and who she is with me and who we are together to others. And it starts there. And then after that, we're able to be in tune and in touch with what the world is feeling, what the world is going through. And I believe that that is the secret to the War and Treaty, on top of just being in tune and listening to the universe. But I also think we're misunderstood, because the War and Treaty, our songs are not just about pain and trauma. If we do sing about the pain, we always sing about the victory on the other side of that. I like to make that a focal point for the War and Treaty moving forward, that in everything, there is still hope. In everything, there's joy, and we are a joyous band. We love for people to come to our shows and experience the revival, experience that freedom from that pain and that agony or that trauma that might go through. War and Treaty, we've really just dug and needled in, you know, are you hurt? Are you pain? Our world is in pain. Our world, you know, there's so much more to our world than just pain. And moving forward, that's where we're going to be living at for a good while.
I already feel that in your songs. For example, Take Me In almost feels like a spiritual, which always said things are tough, but they're going to be better.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I think the foundation of the War and Treaty is definitely gratitude. Because when you come from a grateful place, whatever you're going through, you're always rooted in it could be worse, or it's really tough right now, but there's always hope on the other side. And whenever you look through life with the lens of gratitude, you understand that, as they used to say in the old Baptist church, trouble don't last always, you know? And I think that's what the War and Treaty is all about, is that, yeah, we're going to go through this, mm-hmm. and it's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. But in doing that, you don't have to live in with a dim energy around you, surrounding you, because there is hope.
But as it pertains to the single, Take Me In, what we set out to do was to tell a common story in America. In our world, yes, but in our country, there's a common story that certain kind of people or a certain kind of person does not fit in. And what we're looking to do, we're looking to change that kind of narrative with Take Me In. You know, if you look at the first verse, take me in like I've never been, leading me now to your heart's chagrin. You know, like, don't just accept me. Take me in. Inhale me. Get to know who I am. Judge me, as Dr. King said, not by the color of my skin, but the contents of my character. Then we have, because I've seen our mothers cry within from our fathers who refuse to call us kin. When we think of the forefathers and the Constitution and those that proclaim to uphold those truths to be self-evident, well, they have not been self-evident to people that look like Tanya and I, or people that may look like the different norm, or people that may look like you, Marcy, but they might have different preferences, whether it be sexually or whether it be a preference of what you consider they are. And this country has found a unique way to dismiss this group of characters or these groups of people that add so much worth and value and depth to our society. So when we say our fathers refuse to call them kin, what we're saying now is, moving forward, we're not taking no for an answer. even if it means sinking our nails into your skin and holding on as you walk away, we want to be taken in. We want our worth to be seen. I feel that that is where we are as a whole society, because we're starting to see less tolerance for racism, less tolerance for slip of the tongues. And we're starting to see more and more people, organizations and companies take a stand, whether they take financial hit or not.
Tanya, I read where you said that Take Me In is about unconditional acceptance, but there's been a lot of events lately, the killing of Black men and women by police and the summer protests, that show us that people are not being seen as individuals. How do you see your work intersecting with the Black Lives Matter movement?
You know, it's very interesting when people ask that question, because I would say all of my career, even before the war and treaty, your skin automatically puts you in a movement whether you like it or not. The mere fact that you're Black, it means that you have to have something to say if something happens to a person that looks like you in this country. There's a responsibility that you have to say something. So I think just having our skin color is a responsibility. The fact of the matter is, you have a group of people who aren't heard, who want to be heard, and who now have a movement based off of they would like to be seen and be heard. And because my skin is that color, some of the things that they do stand for, I do stand for. Police killings are wrong. Some of the laws do need to be changed from the state level to the federal level. And those are things that are facts in this country. So I look at the facts and I look at how our music intertwines with that. The mere fact that we are African-American couple doing Americana music, going to festivals sometimes where there's only one person that looks like us, you know, there, or seeing at some festivals where the Black people are just the workers, then that's the part of it that we,
well,
you know.
Let's make that very clear. When we say workers, most of the African-American people we see at these festivals are custodians. They clean the festival grounds, and they are very much so dismissed by most of the festival organizers. In fact, Ty and I, we had to correct a promoter one time on the circuit because this older Black gentleman in his, I want to say probably mid-70s, still sweeping the grounds, came over to Ty and I, and we were the only Black act at an all-white festival. And he was trembling and he held our hands and he simply said, "I'm so happy to see you here." Well, the festival promoter walked over and said, "Hey, get away from the artist. You're not supposed to be over here. Get back and do what you're doing." And we had to let him know, man, that's our uncle, our grandfather, our cousin, our ancestor. Like, we matter and they matter and you matter. Everyone on this earth matters. I think that we're in a very pivotal moment in our history, once again, where we as a country, we have to make an intentional choice to eradicate these kinds of behaviors and be willing to educate the people that are upholding these kind of behaviors and be willing to get in the trenches with them, not throw people away per se, but be willing to get in the trenches and have those hard conversations and be willing to take a moment, take a break, because some things might be said that might offend, but keep in mind that the end game is always understanding.
I know you have a young son, so how do you raise him to understand that everybody isn't there yet without making him bitter or afraid?
What we've come to learn is that they raise themselves. It's when we interfere is when they start to second guess what they naturally come in the world feeling. It's when we interfere that they start to be afraid. And we interfere with our fears instead of guiding. So what we do is we wait until he poses the questions. In fact, this might seem very strange. Our son has 8 friends. That's it. And then he has 6 cousins. Out of his 8 friends, 6 of his friends are white and 2 are Black. It's an even number of girls and boys, right? None of those children know about racism, hatred, none of that stuff. They just love to be with each other. They love to be in each other's company. And so we wait till our son comes and says, how come my hair doesn't flow in the wind like Charlie's? Or we'll wait until Charlie says, how come his skin, when the water hits, it turns to like it's visibly ash. We have decided as parents that what we've come to know, we don't have to raise our children in those kinds of things. And they recognize when something's off. We don't do that here. That's not us. They recognize when one of them are off. They have a perfect love and a perfect friendship. And if we could just be like those little children again, I think that we could fix what we've jacked up. Now, don't get me wrong. We teach our son etiquette. That's different. We teach him etiquette when we are pulled over by the police, that he doesn't move. He sits still with his hands visible. We teach our children, period, etiquette. We teach them how to respond to adults. Yes, sir. No, ma'am. Black or white. But what we don't do is we do not introduce something that I feel or Tanya may feel is not time for yet.
Right. It's interesting because I have a 25-year-old son, too. So I've gone through it before. And same thing, he grew up on Capitol Hill. All of his friends were all different races, and he had black friends as well. But I remember when he turned 14 and they went to the mall in Virginia. And one of his friends decided that they were going to be teenagers and he was going to take a shirt. His friend happened to be a white kid. He'd been his friend since he was 2 years old. And he didn't get caught, but my son did. And when the officer saw him, they took him back to the office. They let him go. But it was a talk that we had to have because they didn't do anything to his friend. And we had a conversation with him is that, you know, in this country, unfortunately, the rules are a little bit different for you, you know. So if you take that shirt and you walk out, the repercussions are going to be a little bit higher for you. Because my dad was a cop for 25 years in D.C. And I remember him just telling me, if you get pulled over, because I was a mouthy little teenager. He was like, just be quiet. Now is not the time for you to show how smart you are, how intelligent, how you know the law. It's time for you to be quiet and call me. That's it.
This whole experience of separateness, and you say the point of Take Me In is we are in this together. I am like you. Is it at all frustrating that we have to have Black History Month? I know it's something that we can celebrate, but the idea that we have to make a point of recognizing the contributions of Blacks to this country?
It's not. February is not frustrating. March is. April, May, June. We're very excited to have February reserved to acknowledge the contributions that African Americans have made. But I feel that it is all of our responsibility to make every day a day of celebration for all accomplishments in this country. We have to make conscious efforts to not dismiss anyone's accomplishments. So February and Black History Month does not make me upset. And not everything has to be about slavery. Not everything has to be about the chains and the beatings. There's so much more in our history to celebrate about the contributions of African Americans.
Yeah. Tanya, is that frustrating to you? What about the scientists and the playwrights and the poets?
Well, it's interesting because there's only two counties in America that are dominated by African Americans, and one is in Jonesboro, Georgia. I can't remember the county. The other one is Prince George's County in Maryland. So when you grow up in these areas where if the population is 7 million people and about 5 million of them are African Americans, you really don't hear that much about the slavery. We grew up hearing about the scientists. We grew up hearing about the people who went to Howard University, 3-4 generations of college graduates, doctors, lawyers. My cousin in New Bern, North Carolina, he's a judge. You grew up hearing about the success. You knew that it was there. And I feel like now everything has boiled down to just Black people just being slaves. You can't just group Black History Month and make it about slavery. We have to look at it, as Michael says, and celebrate the success that this country has, like having a Kamala Harris and having a Barack Obama or having a Rosa Parks, Dr. King, people who have done some significant things for the lifestyle of the African-American in this country.
And I'd also like to say, Marcy, because I think it's sad that we see it as Black history and not just American history. Mm-hmm. This country has a skill for making it Black versus white or just Black and white. Mm-hmm. When there are American Indians, there are American Chinese, there are different people who have migrated to this country and broken their backs to make a living and to make a contribution. People who have emphatically said, I will make my mark in history, and understanding that this land is your land and my land, and understanding that we don't have to get into a debate about who was here first. What we need to do is realize who's here now. Our country is set up to give opportunities, to give chances, and to let your voice be heard. And we have to remember that all voices matter too.
We spent a good amount of time now talking about the value of everyone. You have this line in Take Me In about, there I can wash away my sins. That is a line that says, I am flawed and I have not forgiven myself. Michael, you've been very open about suicidal contemplation, PTSD from your time in Iraq. Have you forgiven yourself? Do you feel I am as worthy as anyone?
Yes. And I look at it like this. It's the tears. It's the tears I've cried. It's the tears I've made others cry. It's the tears that my wife and my children, my ex-wife, my parents, even the tears of the Iraqi people, some of these moral injuries that I would hold right here, those tears were the ones that cried for me and washed me and said, it's okay. That was then, this is now. And I want Take Me In to be a cleansing river for someone, to never give up, to never quit, and to never be so down on yourself that you can't recognize that there's healing waters, a healing fountain, and it comes in the form of so many different beautiful things that our earth has to offer. Mine came in the form of my Tanya telling me to give her 5 more minutes. Mine came in the form of my children saying that they love me, my little son, and my daughter saying that they needed me. And I have forgiven myself for seeing myself a certain way. And that's just where I am today.
Take me.
I've been there once and I'll go again, just as long as you're the one to take me in. Like a free bird circling in the wind, I'll fly to your cage so you can take me in. Oh, won't you take me in? Thank you. from our fathers who refused to call us kin. But I sing.
Treaty with Take Me In from their new album Heartstown, and I cannot thank Michael and Tanya enough for their time and their graciousness and their openness. It's really astonishing.